there's only so much a body can do. It won't be absorbing minerals, right? So therefore, you won't as efficiently absorb magnesium and calcium. And instead, you might, even if you're eating those, you might be having those ingredients and minerals excreted through the body because the body's trying to do something else. So maybe we need to reconsider what kind of diet we are having, where we want to start with bone health.
You know, it's so interesting because acidity is a root cause of bone loss. There's like seven main ones. I always place so much emphasis on inflammation and stress and being sedentary or not using our body in the right way for being some of the bigger root causes. But you just you shed so much more light on the acidity role of bone loss.
Welcome to Stronger Bones Lifestyle Podcast. I am Debbie Robinson, your host and guide on your Stronger Bones lifestyle journey.
My next guest is Dr. Monisha Banote. She is a quintuple board certified physician, best-selling author, and founder of Wellcoola. With expertise in integrative medicine, functional culinary medicine, cytopathology, and anatomic clinical pathology, she combines ancient wisdom with mind-body science to support evidence-based holistic well-being. Dr. Banote holds dual degrees in chemistry and Asian studies from Brigham University, and she continued further obtaining her medical degree and then completing training at NYU Winthrop University Hospital. She has also pursued multiple fellowships, including cytopathology at Cornell University, breast, bone, and soft tissue cancer at the University of Rochester, and integrative medicine at the Andrew Weil Center for Integrative Medicine in Arizona. In addition to her extensive training, Dr. Banote has certifications in mindfulness-based stress reduction, plant-based nutrition, culinary medicine, Ayurveda, yoga for cancer recovery, and as a yoga medicine therapeutic specialist. Dr. Banote's whole body approach to healing focuses on areas such as nutrition and the microbiome, stress and inflammation in disease manifestation, mindfulness as a lifestyle practice, and disease prevention. She is highly regarded as a health and wellness expert, providing speaking engagements and written commentary to various news media outlets and publication. Dr. Banote has diagnosed over 1 million cancer cases, provides health programs at drbanote.com, and leads wellness workshops and retreats worldwide. She has been featured in Shape, Reader's Digest, and Martha Stewart's Living. Dr. Banote serves on several clinical advisory boards and is a go-to health and wellness expert for Healthline, Psych Central, and Medical News Today. Dr. Banote aims to promote an integrative approach to evidence-based holistic well-being. You can find more about her in the show notes. Visit her website. She has a free cookbook and has a book, The Anatomy of Well-Being. Dr. Banote, welcome to Stronger Bones Lifestyle Podcast. It is so wonderful to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm looking forward to our conversation today.
Oh yeah, I am so excited because I think what you're going to share today is what so many women want to hear, need to hear, and especially those that are looking for natural approaches to bone health or to taking control of their bones and learning what is it they need to do. And we're going to speak a lot about food and the role that plays. That is a tool in your treasure chest of tools for supporting your bone health. So I am excited.
Thank you. Yeah, absolutely. Food is one of the things that we do every day, right? And there's so much confusion around what should I eat? What should I not eat? And I think we've kind of complicated nutrition, and I would love to uncomplicate it a little bit for you, or maybe a lot for you. Because at the end of the day, food is really there to nourish our body and our friends, our microbiome. So yeah, let's dive in.
Yeah. And you know what it is? It's a tool, like you said, all day, every day. Food can be medicine and food can also be poison. And so this is probably the area of the women that I work with, the biggest, most confusing and hardest area for them, where the most questions exist, is with diet. What should I eat? What shouldn't I eat? So let's begin there. Let's talk about what most people are eating. What does the diet most or mainly look like for most people?
So absolutely. So I see plenty of patients come in and you know, even before they become my patient, I have a conversation with them, and almost always out of their mouth is, I eat really healthy. I'm on a healthy diet. I don't need to worry about that. And then I'm like, huh, okay, you think you eat healthy, yet we have this whole span of health conditions, whether it's thyroid disease, heart disease, osteoporosis, you know, cancer. And I'm going, then there is a major education block that has been created in our lifestyles in America that we don't actually know what is a healthy diet. And that's where I come in and we really analyze blood work, and we analyze their physical symptoms to see what is going on. So what are most people eating? Most people are eating the standard American diet, which is a, you know, they have embedded in their head, high protein. You got to get all the protein in. Don't eat carbs. Don't eat grains. Don't eat real food at the end of the day. But really, they're eating a lot of, you know, going back to the days of just grilled chicken for lunch, grilled chicken for dinner, and looking at what's on people's plates or consuming, I don't know how many eggs, but yes, they're only doing the egg whites because that's what they want. That's what they're thinking is the right thing to do. So what are most people eating? They're eating a acidic diet. Okay. So what are the things that are acidic? Red meat, right? So whether you're eating beef, pork, or lamb, that is a source of an acidic diet. Chicken, turkey, especially when done in large quantities, can be very acidic. So going back to the people who are always a grilled chicken, I've got a breast of grilled chicken on my plate. Aside from the fact, if we even talk about cancer, we're talking about bone health today, right? Processed meat. So whether that's bacon for breakfast, it's like a no-brainer. People go to the deli, get a bacon, egg and cheese bagel. Like they don't think about it. They're not thinking about what's actually going in their body. High consumption of seafood, high consumption of eggs, especially the white part, and then cheese. Who doesn't love cheese? I love cheese. I agree with you. I love cheese. It was one of the last things I changed to giving up when I became plant-based vegan. So it can have a really high acidic effect. Now, why do we even care about acidic diets? Well, we care about it because when you have an acidic diet, mostly from animal proteins that, and also a diet that's low in fruits and vegetables, this can lead to something called metabolic acidosis. And so the body is trying to neutralize the effect of this. And how does it neutralize it? It leaches calcium. And calcium, as most people know, is the base for the bones, right? So over time, like you might not see this in your 30s, 40s, but then when you get to that kind of perimenopausal, postmenopausal stage, you got multiple factors coming in. And now that can increase the risk, this leaching of calcium can increase the risk of osteoporosis and fractures. So we never talk about this. We kind of just go on living our lives, eating what we think is going to be good for us in the long run. But when I'm thinking about health from a longevity perspective, I'm looking at all these aspects, right? So that's one thing it does. It's going to affect how calcium is leaving the bone. It's also affecting it stimulates our specific cells. And I'm always talking about cellular health and then which cells, right? So we're talking about osteoclasts. Osteoclasts are the, you can think of the cells that break down bone or bone resorption, whereas osteoblast with a B build bone, right? So class, like they kind of chew it up, right? Think of it like that. And when we have acidic diets, that can lead to weaker bones because of this activation of osteoclasts. And the third thing I would say a high acidic diet would do is it's going to affect your kidneys, right? So we're not even thinking about bone health there because it's your kidneys that are being influenced. And if the kidneys have too much acid to excrete, there's only so much a body can do. It won't be absorbing minerals, right? So therefore, you won't as efficiently absorb magnesium and calcium. And instead, you might, even if you're eating those, you might be having those ingredients and minerals excreted through the body because the body's trying to do something else. So maybe we need to reconsider what kind of diet we are having where we want to start with bone health.
You know, it's so interesting because acidity is a root cause of bone loss. There's like seven main ones. I always place so much emphasis on inflammation and stress and being sedentary or not using our body in the right way for being some of the bigger root causes. But you shed so much more light on the acidity role of bone loss. And even as you're speaking, I'm thinking from a musculoskeletal perspective, the way that the body manages metabolic acidosis or the pH, that precise tight range, the two main ways is kidneys, dissolving bones, and the lungs. And I'm thinking about posture and all that compression on the lungs, and women can't even breathe as deep or oxygenate or do that gas exchange in support of maintaining that pH. So wow, so much more emphasis now on acidity as a root cause. Yes, and there's a lot of research that came out, I think, August 2022, that said 100 grams of protein. And then sometimes I hear body weight of protein. And so, you know, that's why women, I think, in particular, are really reaching for that chicken breast and that. And often people will say to me, if you're vegan or vegetarian, how are you going to get your protein? So that, you know, that's like, why are they choosing that acidic diet? It's because they think they're doing something right. And then can I get that from plants? And so this is what I'm so cannot wait to hear this about you, because you do the research and you are a cell specialist. So can we then go from that's what we're doing, which is not working, ladies, because it's acidic, and acidity for all those causes you gave are going to contribute to bone loss, stimulating the bone dissolvers, I call them, the osteoclasts. I either call it the cleanup crew with clast and the builders of the blast, builder, blast, cleanup crew, class, or I say bone building and bone dissolving. So acidity and eating that chicken breast and just choosing whites of eggs is dissolving, dissolving, dissolving. So can we then speak about building and choosing the right foods to help support building bones, muscles, all other tissues in our bodies?
Yeah, so absolutely. So in, you know, some people be like, oh, well, there's no research on this, you know, and actually, there is quite a bit of research on how plant-based nutrition is great for bone health, right? And even if we think about the blue zones and longevity and these kinds of diets, 90 to 95% of what's on their plate is plants, okay? So we need to, you know, if you're coming from a more meat dominant, like consider just moving the scale, right? I mean, and really paying attention to how you feel as you adjust that scale. I know for individuals, it can be quite hard. However, in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, they actually found that older adults who ate more fruits and vegetables had greater bone mineral density. Right. So it's not about just having one chicken breast. It's about what is 75. I always tell my patients, look at your plate. 75% of that needs to be vegetables or fruits, with the majority of vegetables, depending on which fruits you are using. And when it comes to calcium and, you know, we've all seen those got milk commercials. Right. So I grew up in the time with, you know, Mary Lou Retton and Got Milk and, you know, Milk Mustache and Milk. And actually, there's quite a few. There's a rebranding going on in the Got Milk world right now with a lot of celebrities supporting to drink milk. But I want you to keep in mind that high milk consumption does not actually prevent osteoporosis or decrease fractures. There's research from a British medical journal that says that. In fact, higher dairy has actually been linked to increased fracture. Okay. Higher dairy consumption is also linked to breast and prostate cancer. So please keep that in mind, especially when 1 in 8 women has breast cancer. So then my patients will ask me, well, where am I going to get my calcium from if I'm not going to be drinking milk? You know, we start feeding kids milk in school, right? With the little milk cartons that are on every school lunch and everything. Have we seen osteoporosis go down? No, we haven't.
Right.
It's actually increasing.
Yeah, I just want to say something else because I'm a no dairy, no gluten. Those are two of the biggest things I think you need to take off your plate right away. The dairy is the hardest because women come and they're drinking their milk, but they're also taking yogurt. And we'll talk microbiome later and probiotics in there. But the thing that people need to understand is that it's not natural. Cows are artificially inseminated. We take the calf away. We take all of their milk. It's not the way humans would have normally drank it. When we hook up the cows to the metal machines, there's pus and blood in the milk. We're using antibiotics to neutralize that. There's so many factors of the way we even get milk, get cheese, you know, got proof. How do we get milk, get cheese, get yogurt? And what's the process? And the proteins in milk, I run food sensitivity labs. I know you run a lot of labs. They're inflammatory, and inflammation is a root cause of bone loss. So we really do need to kind of break this apart. I'm so glad you're sharing this because it is lots of confusing information out there. And you are like quintuple, which means five, board certified on so many levels. You have so much training and so many specialties. You know your research. You're not just someone out there saying this. You really know your stuff. And this is why I'm so happy. So I just cannot even tell you how happy I am that you're sharing this, because this is my soapbox. This is what I'm screaming from the mountaintops. Yes, dairy is, there's a YouTube called Dairy is Scary. And it is a weird thing, the girl. It's a little bit over the top, honestly, but it is. So thank you for saying that. So, okay. And so that's what everyone's thinking. That's where you get your calcium. So if we're not going to get our calcium from a place that's going to trigger inflammation and not support bone health, which is what a lot of the studies are showing, where do we get it?
Absolutely. So let me give you some other sources of plant-based calcium. Okay. So a cup of cow's dairy milk has about 300 milligrams of calcium. And even before I give you the list of foods to incorporate, I want you to keep in mind that bone health is not just calcium. Bone health is vitamin D, vitamin K, calcium, magnesium, a phosphorus. Okay. So where do you get that all from a diverse diet, not just from drinking a cup of milk. Okay. So if we're kind of doing our comparison of a cup of cow's milk and 300 milligrams of calcium, where else can you get this? Think of almonds, right? So almonds, we usually snack on them. And we're not thinking about this all at one comparable. Think about what you're eating throughout the day, right? Because there's more to food than just sitting there and lining it up and making sure, oh, I got this cup and I got that. Food works better when it's mixed and balanced in a whole foods predominant diet, because there's so many more nutrients in there, like phytonutrients, flavonoids, all these chemicals that you don't need to worry about the names of, but they are doing a lot of things in the body. So almonds is a great one. You can get from eating 23 almonds, you can get about 80 milligrams of calcium. My favorite is tofu. I know for some people, they might be sensitive to tofu, but actually, if you are not sensitive, tofu is a great way, depending on what kind you buy, non-GMO organic tofu. You can get anywhere from 350 to 500 milligrams per half cup, which is like half cup is not that much. It's like half a block, right, of tofu. Collard greens is another great source. Almost about, I think it's something like a little bit less than 300 per cup of collard greens. That's comparable. Plus, in the collard greens, you are also getting more vitamins like vitamin K and stuff. And collard greens is more bioavailable than dairy. Why do people have so much dairy intolerance now? Because our body is not meant to have it. You know, so much so that they had to develop a, I don't know what it's called, like an A2 milk or something. Like the body just is not meant to have this. Other sources might be chia seeds, right? So chia seed pudding has become very popular. And in just 2 tablespoons of chia seeds, you can get about 180 milligrams. So now imagine if you made a chia seed pudding for breakfast instead of your Yoplait yogurt. That would be a great source. Figs. Figs are totally underrated. Figs are a great source, about 120 milligrams per 4 cups. And I actually have 4 figs remaining on my fig tree right now, but it's gotten a little cold here that they're not going to fully ripen. So I'm actually going to take them down and just kind of saute them to eat them because they have nutrients in them that are totally worth having.
Was it four figs? Because you said 4 cups, but you meant four figs.
No. I for figs, I said 120 milligrams per half cup.
Half cup, okay.
I have 4 figs on a fig tree on my front porch. Okay. So I'm not going to let them go to waste, even though they probably won't ripen. I will take the unripe figs and probably make a curry out of them, believe it or not. Yes. This is where I incorporate something that I call functional culinary medicine, right? Really using functional foods and taking the foods and going, all right, what can I do to help create this body in this like new way, right? How can I use food beyond what I think of using it as, right? So most people might think of, all right, let me just eat figs on the side, like as a fruit. Okay, but there's other ways you can use food, right? So same thing, you know, we're used to maybe having an apple or banana for breakfast. Like who said we can't have like a red bell pepper for breakfast? Or, you know, like we gotten into this, this is breakfast, this is lunch, this is dinner, right? And these are food categories. We need to look beyond that because there's so many more nutrients. A couple more, let me give you bok choy. Another one I don't see people using that much, and a cup cooked very low in calories, but you can get about 74 milligrams. It's super nutrient dense, bok choy. From a seed perspective, I already gave you chia seeds. I would also consider sesame seeds and using maybe tahini, right? So 2 tablespoons of tahini is about 130 milligrams. Also a great source of fiber. So if you're making a salad dressing, put some tahini in there and make your salad dressing from that. Lemon juice, tahini, a little bit of olive oil. And then beans, white beans. A cup cooked is 120 milligrams, right? So you're also, one, getting a source of fiber, a source of cholesterol-lowering food, a source of heart-healthy food, but also fiber is what your gut wants. It's what I call your BFFs want. And we're not feeding our BFFs, our gut microbiome, what they need. Because if we're eating that, going back to that acidic diet, what are the 3 things that don't have fiber? Dairy, meat, and sugar. What do we eat? Dairy, meat, and sugar.
Yeah. Okay. And we're going to get into the microbiome soon as well. The thing about the tahini dressing, putting that on some of those dark leafy greens is so creamy and delicious, so it makes them palatable. One thing you were speaking about, calcium, I think that we're so focused on a single nutrient. We need calcium and vitamin D. And even when women get a diagnosis, their physicians are recommending medication, and I see now they're recommending vitamin D and calcium. The thing is, it's like an orchestra. So it's not just that you have the violins and you have the, you know, the wind instruments and the percussion. It's all of it together. You need vitamin D to let calcium get absorbed. You need magnesium to put calcium in solution. You need vitamin K to cross-link it, to put it in the bones. And then all those other nutrients, the phosphorus, you need, it's all of it together, which is why just thinking, where's my calcium? Where's my this? Where's my that? Doesn't work. And then you get bombarded with, Well, I don't even know that I wanted to talk about RDAs because that was like established in the 1940s for nutrient density. How do we know we really need 100 milligrams or 1200? What do we really know we need? Who's inside the body? Who is determining that every body needs 1,000 milligrams?
Yeah. So these guidelines have been put in place and they change very slowly. They are not changing at the rate we are seeing disease develop. Okay, so that's something to keep in mind. So a guideline that is 10 years old, 20 years old, it was based off of what was going on then. On top of that, it does not take into account personalized medicine. Everybody is different, okay? So one person's calcium needs versus another person's protein needs versus anything. And you know, just to give you a prime example of this is vitamin D, right? So vitamin D for bone health, yes, doctors will prescribe vitamin D, but what are they prescribing? They are prescribing the lowest amount vitamin D, okay? So usually about 1,000 IU, okay? And do you think that's going to make a difference in somebody's bone health if that person has a vitamin D level of, say, 22 versus somebody who has a vitamin D level of 30, it's going to take them years to increase that at that level. That's why personalized medicine, when it comes to vitamin D, my patients know, how do I calculate vitamin D? I calculate it off their most recent blood test. I calculate it off of what their current intake is, both supplementation and food. And I calculate it off their weight. That is the accurate way to make sure you are getting correct supplementation. Another thing is most doctors, well, let's just say probably due to insurances, will not repeat the vitamin D. Okay. Now, vitamin D, you got to remember, is a fat soluble vitamin. So it can become toxic in the body. And especially if you carry more adipose tissue, it will go sit there, right? So some vitamins, vitamin D being technically a hormone, actually, will accumulate over time. It's different than the water soluble vitamins like B vitamins or vitamin C, which will just kind of be processed throughout the body. So now, if you are just number one taking vitamin D, the doctor told you to get something off the shelf, and you're wondering why your DEXA scan year after year is not getting better, and you're continuing to lose bone, I would go back to your doctor and be like, I want my vitamin D checked more regularly. Insurance companies, I think, only cover it once, and that assuming that your doctor is going to give you something and it's going to increase. Some people might have a receptor problem, meaning that they actually can't convert the vitamin D. So their dosages might be even more different, right? So there's a lot of factors that come into play there. And that's why I always say to people, personalized testing, functional laboratory testing, really being integrative about your approach. It's not a this or that. It's a what can I do? What does my body need? Because you are a unique individual down to your cellular level. Everyone is so unique. So I just, if anything, I would ask you to keep that in mind, you know, especially when I see people comparing, oh, this person got this treatment and this worked for them and that person got that treatment. You have no idea what that person is doing in their household. Maybe they've been lifting, you know, 5 pound weights, even if it's for 5 minutes for decades, you know, and you go to the gym with them and you think you're doing the same thing as them. So there's a lot of things. So instead of spending your time comparing what other people are doing, look at what are all the different things in your 24 hours of your day, your 7 days a week, that you can do to apply different things to improve your health.
Yeah, functional medicine testing, functional tests are really a key. So before we go into nutrient absorption and gut, which, you know, we have to, what are we eating and then does it get to your bones? A couple of plant sources of protein, because that's another big one. We talked about calcium and vitamin D and some of the other things, but really protein. Women are always asking me because they're caught up in, do I need 100 milligrams a day, which was kind of the latest, or do I need 1 gram per body weight? So can you just share a little bit about protein? Because that's a really important element to skeletal muscle, to bone, to tissues.
Yeah, absolutely. So Just to give a baseline, I would say calculate your protein amount based off of your weight, and that's your baseline. It does not incorporate what you do physically. So take your 0.8 milligrams per kilogram body weight and times that. So for the average woman, it's about 50, 56 grams. Then look at what are your sources of protein currently, right? And I mean real protein. I don't mean protein powders, protein shakes, and the excess of animal protein, because once again, we go back to the acidic diet. If you are eating animal protein, just to lower inflammation in your body, if you look at the anti-inflammatory Mediterranean diets, it's only consumed 1 to 2 times a week. We are consuming it 1 to 2 times per meal. So even if we do a minimum of once a meal, 3 times a day, times 7 days a week, 21 times a week instead of that 1 to 2 times. And then you wonder why you have inflammation. So what are plant-based sources of protein? Ones that are not being utilized and should be utilized more are beans and legumes, right? So legumes, beans, lentils. If you have, and actually, I think we'll talk about this in the microbiome conversation, but beans, legumes, lentils, all great protein sources. Tofu, as I mentioned. So whether you're doing edamame, organic, non-GMO, soy, tempeh, great sources. Nuts and seeds are great sources. Seeds should be like everywhere, like just sprinkling seeds on all your meals. Those are some of the ones that I use very, very often. I think if you are shifting from a non-plant-based diet to a plant-based diet and becoming more plant-forward, I would recommend starting slow. And what happens is people are like, oh, okay, I'm going to wake up, it's New Year's, and I'm going plant-based. And then after a week of eating plants, then they're like, oh, well, now I'm bloated. Plants are awful, you know? And I'm like, no, it's not that plants are awful. It's just your gut microbiome, your friends that are there to break down those plants weren't there. You didn't invite the right friends to the party, right? So we need to build upon that with the right friends to help you break down your food.
Yeah, so a couple of plant sources you mentioned, beans, and then that's a whole other topic, the whole oxalate, phytate, anti-nutrients, bioavailability, which we're not going to go into that one, but then that brings that up, and that's where all the naysayers are having a lot of conversations around that. So maybe that could be a future podcast in a talk, because that's a big thing. But so beans, legumes, and even vegetables have protein.
Yes, vegetables do. You have about 3 to 4 grams, per cup. You can get some protein from veggies for
Yeah,
sure.
I always say the largest land animals, elephant, cow, horse. If grass can grow a cow or a horse, it surely can grow a human. Okay, so then that brings us now to it's not just about what you eat. It then has to go somewhere to then go inside. So the gut is the outside world still. It's mouth to anus closed system. It's really the outside world that becomes the inside world once it crosses that mucosal barrier. And before it crosses that barrier, lots of stuff happens there. This is where all that nutrient absorption takes place. And this is where you might either absorb or not absorb everything you're eating. So then we have to have the gut in the role of breaking down the food and having the nutrients available to be absorbed and assimilated and delivered to the tissues. So a little bit there on the role of the importance of a healthy gut for nutrient absorption.
Yeah, absolutely. So there is emerging research talking about the relationship between the gut microbiome and bone health. And it does come down to a combination of nutrient absorption. What do the, does the microbiota or your microbiome actually do to convert different vitamins and minerals so they can be utilized by the rest of the body? From a gut perspective, what I see with people is that there's a number of things going on. Some people might have a maldigestion problem, and meaning that, okay, now they've eaten the best diet, but they're not able to break down the food. So if you can't break it down, how could you possibly get the nutrients from it? And easy ways to kind of think about this is if you are eating, what does your stool look like? Does your stool show undigested food? You know, other than corn, but we shouldn't be seeing undigested food in our stool, right? So that's just an easy way to kind of think about it. Also think about how often are you moving your bowels to, you know, I'm just trying to give you an idea of how to check what's going on with your microbiome. Easy, quick way to do that is to take a tablespoon of chia seeds and see how quickly it goes through your bowel, because those you will see in your stool, right? So the quick and easy, like I have people who are going to the bathroom once a day. I have some people who go to the bathroom once every 3 days. And I'm like, those are toxins building up in the body, right? So when we're thinking about what's going on in the gut microbiome, it's a balance between maldigestion, inflammation, the different kinds of inflammation that can be occurring in the body. It's the dysbiosis, which is a imbalance between your good and bad gut microbiota, whether that is a bacterial one, whether that's a yeast one. And then there's metabolic factors, meaning are you producing the metabolites like short chain fatty acids, which are responsible for lowering inflammation? Is your body even producing them? Because in some people, they're not even producing them, right? Because they don't have the ingredients before that. And then we've got plenty of people walking around with pathogenic organisms that they have no idea. They've picked up, they've had them for years. We have no idea how they've gotten them, but that is contributing to their body not being able to do what it needs to optimize their health.
Yeah, you've got to make sure you're digesting properly. I run stool labs. There's bacteria that can get in the way of digestion. If you don't have the proper breakdown of food that goes into small intestines, you're not feeding those good gut microbes. I look at it like a garden. You have flowers and weeds. If you're not supporting your flowers, then they produce vitamins. They're the gatekeepers of the mucosal barrier, which leads to leaky gut. And if you have leaky gut, you're stimulating inflammation. And in some of the stool labs that I run, and I'm imagining you run some of the ones that I do as well, we could see steatocrit, which is a fat marker. Are they metabolizing or digesting fat well, and elastase 1 markers? So yeah, it is this whole entire chain. And then we have to feed the good gut microbiome, the good species, because they are the gatekeepers. They're the protection. They produce those short chain fatty acids, which help to maintain your fortress. That I call it the fortress. It's like, this is our castle. The bones are your castle. You want them to be like a stone castle, and you need that fortress, or you have, you know, invaders coming over the walls. And you're right, there's so much more research. I think 2021, there was a big, maybe NIH study or something that talked about the microbiome's role in bone metabolism. And we're understanding so much more the relationship of all of this. So bringing in the food, digesting it, absorbing it, assimilating it, and then kind of what we've been speaking about, not stimulating the bone dissolving aspects in our body or disease producing, right? You're talking cancer. I work with a lot of the women that I run labs on. I see lots and lots of thyroid issues. So a very high percentage of the women I work with running functional labs are also on thyroid meds. And then a smaller percentage, but still significant, is cholesterol, fat metabolism issues. So I see those three body systems: bone metabolism, fat metabolism, and thyroid, which is a master metabolism in the body, being affected by lifestyle and, you know, food here being a part of that. So the microbiome, when you can, and I'm sure you see this in the work you do, when you start to heal the gut and rebalance, get that balance internally that's necessary, so many other, there's a positive domino effect in many other body systems in health.
There's a very recent study, actually one of the largest that's been done on bone health, just came out of Harvard, about the impact of the microbiome on bone health, right? So what they were looking at is they used the participants, I should say, from the Framingham Heart Study. So that was about a little bit over 1,000 men. And then they used another study looking at the bone density in specific bones, the forearm and the shin bone, right? And then they also looked at the gut microbiome of these individuals by sampling their stool And looking at that microbial makeup, they found that there was a difference in the presence of certain microbiota that can possibly be associated with a lower bone density. Now, the research is quite early and you know, it still needs to be kind of panned out with like all the different factors, but it is interesting and it does logically make sense because when we think of what the microbiota do, they're responsible for breaking down food, but they're also responsible for making vitamins, minerals, you know, hormones, all these different things. So you just mentioned thyroid disease, right? So there was, if your microbiota is responsible for making some of your hormones and it's your thyroid, you know, so there's all these things going on, I think it becomes a very integrative, comprehensive approach. It's not a one this or that. And like, you know, when you go to your doctor and you're worried about your thyroid and you don't realize your thyroid is influencing your bone health, or think about medications you might be on. Like, at what age did we start handing out antidepressants and anti-anxiety meds to everybody? And that is influencing one, your gut microbiome, but also bone health. Or another one, antacids. I have patients who come to me and they're on antacids for decades. I'm like, no, you're not supposed to. And when I ask them, like, well, who's giving you this prescription? They just keep getting their prescriptions renewed. We as physicians need to go, do you even need this prescription before we renew a prescription, right? So and you as a patient should be like, if you're going for a prescription, do I still need this? Is there anything else I can do other than take this pill? How can I be tapered off these medications that are influencing the rest of my health into my next 10, 20, 30 decades?
Yeah. And you know what? We need acid. We need acid to break down the food. The reason why, I mean, the acidity of the stomach is what, like 2 to 5, or it's a really high acidity. And if you use the antacid, yes, it's coming into your throat because you maybe have H. pylori overgrowth, a bacterial overgrowth, or maybe you're not, don't have enough stomach acid, or you're not digesting well, or you're drinking too much liquid or you ate your food too quickly and you break it down, or you're eating food that's too hard to digest. So it's really about that, not that Band-Aid solution of an antacid.
And I just want people listening, because I know we talked about acidic diets earlier on. We are now talking about something else. I don't want you to confuse like, oh, your body, your stomach needs acid, so let me eat a more acidic diet. I don't want you to confuse it for that.
Right. Yes. With everything works where it should. So the stomach is contained in the super, super acidic. Yeah. And it's not even that you eat an acidic food. Like lemons are highly acidic outside the body, but they're not acidic when they come in because they have an alkalizing effect and they actually support kidneys. That's some of the research that I've seen there. Yeah. Okay. So just like, let's get all this together, because so dairy, I want to get some of the big things, because the biggest questions that I have over and over where I think so much confusion exists for women is dairy and bone health for calcium. And we've spoke about no dairy for bone health, right?
Yeah, so absolutely. So that does not mean, because I still want you to have a probiotic rich diet for a healthy gut microbiome. So it does not need to happen with dairy. You can actually do it with things like sauerkraut or kimchi or a non-dairy kefir or a non-dairy yogurt, like an almond milk yogurt or coconut milk yogurt, or something other than dairy can also help you incorporate probiotic rich foods. Consider maybe even miso soup. Miso soup is very probiotic rich. It's something we actually eat for breakfast sometimes, you know, instead of thinking about it for like dinner, think about having probiotic rich foods for breakfast. And also see where you can incorporate them with each meal. That's what I do with my patients. It's not the quantity. It's just like, if you can have them continuously throughout the day, right? So that might look like 2 tablespoons of non-dairy yogurt in your smoothie. That might look like a side of pickles or sauerkraut for lunch. That might look like for dinner, a low sugar kombucha instead of a glass of wine, you know? So think about How can I incorporate a little bit of this throughout the day? Because it's not the one salad you eat for the week or the one meal that's really healthy that you eat for the week. It's what you do most of the time, right? Not what you do some of the time.
Yeah, it's funny. I went to India twice and we had buffets in a lot of the hotels we went to. And I was amazed that a buffet for breakfast, lunch, and dinner almost looked the same. There was a couple of different ingredients in the morning, a little bit more rice-based, like, I don't know, like donut-looking thing. Italy, I think it's called. Mm-hmm. So there was a little bit more there, but I was amazed that we over here, French toast, sweet things, different food, whereas the most of the world, they're eating very similarly all three meals. So when it comes to probiotics, because that was a good one, thanks for bringing that up, because that's partly why they do milk as or dairy, especially yogurt as well. They're like, I need my probiotics and I need my calcium. So those are two drivers for the why behind dairy. The profile to look for is to look for sour, bitter, and when you're looking at like foods that have a sour or bitter aspect to them, I like to look at different cultures around the world and how they eat. I was just in London and I went to a Kuwaiti restaurant and they brought out on the table this plate. You know, here we do bread and butter, which is ridiculous. Gluten is terrible for almost every aspect of health. But they had this plate of arugula, lemon wedges, and a thing of pickled carrots and something called, I think, like mountain garlic. And it was so fascinating to me because that arugula is sour. It's going to stimulate digestive enzymes to support what's coming next. You had that, the pickled aspect, which is going to have that fermentation and the so supporting digestion with food. Mm-hmm. And so the sour aspect, you know, and yogurt does have a sour aspect, but think of sourness in other foods or bitter to help support digestion and to help support probiotics. And yeah, that's in absolutely. Ayurveda. That's an Ayurveda, right?
Yeah, that is an Ayurvedic approach to it for sure. But I think we need to eat real food. If that's the one piece of advice I could give you is let's start with real food that's without food additives, preservatives. If it's coming in a box and packaged, and it's not real food, you know, like we need to go back to the periphery of the aisle, you know. There's some people that don't even know what some fruits and vegetables are that, you know, we've gotten into this convenience world and convenience is what's killing you.
Yeah. Right? And not to demonize anything, because I can't stand when there's all this demonization of don't eat spinach. It's not bioavailable. It's got oxalates, phytates, don't eat beans and legumes and all of that. So definitely not demonizing food and looking at food as medicine. Okay, so the dairy, plant-based resources, mineral sources, and then you really shared a lot about the role of making sure that it's actually absorbed and assimilated. So, wow. Well, okay. Can you please share how women can find what you're sharing with the world? Because this is, especially for those of us that are, I'm going to say plant-rich diet. I do eat some animals here and there. I haven't had red meat in almost 38 years, but I do some ethically sourced animal products, but I really try to be more plant rich in my approach. So how can we find you? What do you offer?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm easy to find. My website is drbenote.com on all the social media platforms, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. I'm Dr. Benote. So very easy to find me there. I have a complimentary cookbook, free cookbook. It's called The Cell Care Plate. That you can download from my website and we can share the link here. And it really invites you to take a new approach to food and really, like you said, look at food as medicine and how can you incorporate it as easy as possible. All the dishes in that cookbook have been created in a cooking class with non-vegetarian, non-vegan. So they're all meat eaters. And they were like, whoa, who knew veggies could taste like this, right? So that's a great source. I also have my best-selling book. Here you go. The Anatomy of Well-Being, available on Amazon. So you can check that out. That's over 95,000 words. And I don't know how many references. I think about 300 references on how you can really take an integrative approach to your health. And yeah, and then I have a medical clinic for patients in certain states, as well as One of the things that has been asked for over and over again is our cooking classes. So I used to teach cooking classes, both virtually and in person, and we're bringing them back because they have been asked for. So definitely keep your eye out for them. Best way to do that is to be on my email list. And of course, I do annual plant-based retreats, and our next one is in Mexico. So yeah, more than welcome to join that.
Oh, I might join you on that one.
Yeah, join that. It's going to be a good one. It's a longevity retreat, biohack your gut, mind, and soul.
Oh, wow. That's great. Yeah, I'm going to look into that as well. And all your other resources, because I just think you're fantastic. And we need more of what you're sharing, because more, well, especially in my world that I, the women I'm with, a lot of plant-focused, plant-rich mindset, and so much confusion out there. So thank you so much for doing what you're doing.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me today, Debbie.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for listening to Stronger Bones Lifestyle Podcast. Bone loss is not an inevitable part of aging. We don't have to just wait for it to happen. There is so much that you can do. And that is what you will learn each week on the show. Go to my website, debbierobinson.com, if you want more information about what was shared in today's episode. At the bottom of this episode in the show notes, there will be links to whatever was shared. Please subscribe to this podcast, share this podcast with your friends, your family, or any women that you think may be interested or benefit from the information we're sharing. Please rate the podcast. And if you have any questions you'd like asked or answered, I would love to hear from you. Let's do this, ladies. Let's change the way the world views osteoporosis and slow down, stop, or reverse our bone loss, take charge, and show other ladies what is possible. Thank you so much for joining me.